There is so much in this week's edition of The Front Page. Is Kempton doomed? Will Epsom and the Derby Festival be revived? Will the Jockey Club end up buying the Arena Racing Company? Is Car Ying Rising the best horse in the world? And what happened when an illegal WhatsApp bookmaker made his way to Birmingham Magistrates Court last week? All that and more in this week's edition of The Front Page. Yes, welcome to this week's edition of The Front Page. And we really do have so much to get through today, so not a lot of waffle from me on this occasion. I am Lee Mottstead. I'm joined in the studio by Deputy Industry Editor Pete Scargill. Hi, Pete.
Hi, Lee.
And at, you're not at home, are you, Liam? Liam Head, our Lambourn correspondent. Where are you today?
Up in Manchester, rainy Manchester.
Raining in Manchester?
Yeah, as always.
I was going to say, I find that very hard to believe. Well, it seems like it might be raining metaphorically on Kempton in the near future. We're going to start there, and in a wider sense, with news from the Jockey Club, of which there was plenty last week. It involved, to an extent, the Jockey Club's new chief executive, Jim Mullen, making one of his first major public pronouncements in the role on Saturday, when he spoke to, among others, our industry editor Bill Barber, laying out what he had found in his first few months in the job and what he was thinking the Jockey Club has to do going forward. Now, we'd already heard before Saturday about plans for a major investment in Epsom and the Derby Festival, which will look significantly different, they hope, in 2026. On the prize money front, there was major news, and there was major news too in relation to the customer experience. We'll move on to that shortly. But on Saturday, Jim Mullen was talking about, I say, his plans for the Jockey Club going forward. He made clear that looking at the finances of the organisation, that there would need to be a reduction in headcount at the Jockey Club. So we're expecting redundancies. But he said that there would overall be a massive push for growth within the organisation, with Cheltenham and Aintree in particular, the Jockey Club's two most commercially successful tracks, receiving significant investment. However, he was also happy to talk about the future of Kempton Park, which in some ways was a bit of a surprise. He was asked whether, as part of the Jockey Club plans for the future, Kempton would be vulnerable. Remember, back in 2017, the Jockey Club announced they'd done a deal with house builder Redrow to sell the racecourse for a £100 million pot. Now, that never actually happened. But what has happened subsequently, as I talked about this in my column in the Racing Post today, is that the Jockey Club in 2018 took out an option with Redrow, whereby if Redrow at some point in the future before 2028 met certain conditions, including an agreed transfer sale sum, that Kempton would be sold. Now, that wasn't new news as such. What was new is that last week the government's Planning and Infrastructure Bill completed its passage through Parliament. Now it's just waiting for royal assent, which might well come by Christmas. And that is a piece of legislation that significantly changes the situation in relation to Kempton, in that under the new legislation, the government has greater powers to force through planning proposals which it deems to be beneficial. And given the government's growth agenda is largely built around house building and it's already behind its house building targets, there's a feeling that the passage of that legislation could significantly change the landscape in relation to Kempton and make it much more likely that Redrow will exercise its option on Kempton, whereby Kempton will be sold. Because Jim Mullen, the chief executive of the Jockey Club, as I say, he was asked about Kempton by Bill Barber and said, "Kempton is out of my hands." So, Pete Scargill, lots to talk about the Jockey Club. We'll get on to Epsom in a bit and the wider stuff with the Jockey Club. But in particular, Kempton's situation, I said in my column now, looks much more bleak than it did before. Is that how you would read the situation too?
So when you say bleak, you mean bleak as in for the future of Kempton as opposed to the future of what
a Bills from Kempton would provide.
Yeah, in the sense that if you are someone who believes that Kempton should continue as a valued member of the Jockey Club and British Racing's racecourse community, that passage of the bill in the Lords last week does make it much more likely, from my perspective, that Kempton will at some point cease to be a racecourse.
Sure. I mean, as you say, it's been in the offing, potentially, in the background for a long time now. I find it hard to see many arguments for it not going ahead, really. If you flip about there, I mean, what are the benefits of racing at Kempton? It's a place that's effectively run for media rights money, isn't it, with the All Weather?
Yeah.
You know, you don't get big crowds there. And we know the media rights deals are coming up before too long and very possibly going to go down. So financially, from that perspective, it's going to be less useful for the Jockey Club. And like, nobody goes racing there, Lee. No one goes to Kempton.
They don't. They certainly don't go to the All Weather meetings.
They go for one day a year.
Yeah.
The largest crowd there this year is 3,700 odd, and that was for their May bank holiday one at start of May, right? Nobody goes. But it's not. There's not something there that people aren't compelled to it. There's people think about Desert Orchid and Quarto Star, but it's a racecourse that doesn't really do anything for anybody. No.
But maybe that is partly because in those Quarto Star days, and particularly in the Desert Orchid days and the Wayward Lad era, there was maybe a bit more love shown for Kempton. If you go there now as a racegoer, it's grand if you're in that panoramic restaurant. But aside from that, the Kempton race-going experience is not particularly luxurious. If you're not eating upstairs in that area, in one of the hospitality rooms, you wouldn't go to Kempton for a great feed. As you say, most of the racing is pretty poor quality. But against that,
I don't know if it's poor quality, but it's not run for crowds, is it?
Yeah, exactly. Against that, you would say that if you are looking to protect the future of British jump racing, and my God, we need to do that now more than ever, Kempton provides a different sort of racecourse. It provides generally a different sort of terrain in the winter when it is generally better suited to providing good ground. And in a wider sense, is it sensible to say that the racecourse in Britain that is closest to the capital, London, London's racecourse, it was sold there for a long time.
Nobody goes, Lee.
Is that
nobody goes.
But
it doesn't matter
because Kempton isn't really promoted. It isn't really, there's not a lot of love given. It's not a lot of love for Kempton, maybe from the Jockey Club.
But even then, how many people go on King George Day? Like, it's been going down for all of the attempts that Entain, Coral Labrics have put in to making it a better day. They've added some zhuzh to it, haven't they? Spark. I just, you know, the idea of continuing a place just because it provides nice ground in the winter doesn't seem a particularly strong argument for me. I'm not saying they need to build on it.
No.
You know, if they don't build on it, then that's great. But my point is that seems to be something that can be got around as a sport. And if we, you know, well, I'm sure we'll move on to Lord Allen later and some of the comments he made about trying to get racing going. The idea that we're going to be protectionist about everything because we want some nice winter ground, you know, it's not a strong argument. Well, and the Jockey Club are putting, you know, Kempton's not a commercially, well, it's probably reasonably commercial in terms
of media rights.
It's media rights, but you know, for spectators, the money that the Jockey Club are putting into Epsom, that makes more sense because they need to get that place, make with their other courses.
Okay, hold.
You
hold,
understand it, Lee.
Hold on.
I think a lot of the arguments made for Kempton are based on what people want it to be, not what it actually is.
Okay, so, Liam, first of all, I want to know what you think, but also I would be amazed if someone in your normal parish, so not talking about Manchester but Lambourne, Nicky Henderson, he was among the most vocal critics of the plan to sell Kempton back in 2017. I'm sure we're going to be speaking to him. This is Monday morning as we talk now. I'm sure we're speaking to Nicky. I imagine he will be equally vociferous against as he was then.
Yeah, 100%. And I think a lot of trainers, not just in Lambourne, but, you know, across the country will be against this idea of potentially saying goodbye to, a course like Kempton. Yes, as Pete's obviously alluded to, it doesn't seem to get the attention up until Boxing Day and the day after when you know it's a 2-day Christmas extravaganza there at the track. So I think from a trainer's point of view, it is worrying because as we've mentioned, it you generally seem to get really good ground at that time of year, and there's always competitive racing, and the prize money is always good value. So it is a worrying time from their point of view. But as Pete said, it's you have to look at the whole 365 day calendar. Like in terms of Kempton, that the two biggest days, certainly the biggest day, is obviously Boxing Day and the King George. And aside from that, and the day after, it doesn't get the sort of attention it probably hoped for.
Pete, even if you take the position that you do, whereby you're not necessarily...
I'm not necessarily taking a position. I'm putting forward... I'm not advocating for houses to be built in Kempton. I'm just saying, if you look at it the other way...
You can see the opposite point of view.
Yes.
How do you feel about the situation whereby the Jockey Club has got itself into a situation whereby, to an extent, Kempton's future is now beyond its control, in the sense that in 2018 it did this deal with Redrow, whereby if Redrow meets certain conditions, in effect, Kempton gets sold. Even if 7 years on, the Jockey Club's board of stewards and senior executives had a different view to those 7 years ago, the hands are tied.
Presumably this wasn't a secret to the Jockey Club, though. Presumably they knew about 2080, because we've said that Kempton's not received a lot of love.
No.
It's not like they've gone, oh no, they've signed this deal, we need to invest lots in Kempton to make sure that we keep it a part of the portfolio. Do you see what I mean? So yes, you can understand that perhaps coming in now, it not being something that the current board can have anything
Jim
to
Mullen
do
out
with.
Out of my hands. Yeah.
But you know, at the same time, is that quite a nice position for Jim Mullen to be in? Because he could potentially cop a nice bit of cash. He doesn't have to take any responsibility
for the Jockey Club.
Yeah. Yeah. Of course.
Yeah.
And you know, that money can be invested elsewhere. You know, their hands are tied, and it's, I can see there why there would be some frustration. Some people going, how can they tie themselves into this deal? But at the same time, there's not been anything happening at Kempton that says we want to support this course in spite of of this going on in the background. And maybe there's a chicken and egg element to it, I don't know.
Yeah, because they know that at some point the place could be sold.
It's not like, it's not, and you know, the Jockey Club need to earn money, right? And we know that Cheltenham's their biggest commercial earner, isn't it?
Yeah.
Cheltenham Festival, and that's not been doing well. I was looking through their accounts the other day, because that's sort of guy, they got just under $6 million for selling a parcel of land at Haydock. And you know, there's rumours all the time about various courses that might be up for the chop. There's obviously lots of rumours about various things. When they sold the Criterion to York, they got just over £2 million for that. But this is all small fry, isn't it? In the end, it's not going to be transformative.
No.
Whereas, is this potentially able
It'll
to do
it?
It'll
be more transformative. And certainly Jim Mullen, who sent an email to members of Jockey Club staff last week, spoke as well about another deal that is in the offing and they're hoping to get through quite soon. That doesn't relate to racehorse closures, we are told. We don't know what that deal is, but that apparently is moving forward. What we do know, Liam, and I'm going to go to Pete about this because he was in the press conference with me last week as well, what we do know is that Epsom and the Derby Festival is going to look significantly different in 2026. On the one hand, you have got significant changes to the racing programme. Coronation Cup moves to Saturday. It's almost doubled in prize money to £1 million. The Derby goes from £1.5 million to £2 million. So that's clearly welcome in terms of maintaining their profile as races. But the bigger issue for Epsom has been that people haven't been going to the Derby. I live down the road from Epsom in Ashdod. There's not really the local buzz about it that you would have in Liverpool before the Grand National, but the numbers have been pretty dire. If you look at the final pre-COVID year of 2019, there are around 38,000 people at Epsom on Derby Day. This year, we reached what hopefully was a nadir of 22,000 people. Jim Allen, the new general manager, watched all that. He wanted to have an experience of that to see what he wants to do in the future. He and the Jockey Club have laid out lots of plans. And in terms of the race goer experience, we're going to have free entry now to all under 18s, as occurs at most other British meetings. We're going to have free parking across the site. That's probably unprecedented for a major Jockey Club meeting. We're going to have a major attempt to zhuzh up and revive The Hill, which isn't something that brings in much commercial revenue for the Jockey Club, but is a visual embodiment of the health of the Derby. And in tandem with Frank Warren, the big boxing promoter, his Queensbury business, they're going to create something called the Derby Fest, which will try to make a real big event of The Hill. So a definite effort, Liam, to do something with the Derby and the Derby Festival and Epsom to turn around the fortunes of a track that, unlike Cheltenham and Aintree, doesn't really bring much money at all into the Jockey Club's coffers. It is not a commercial success. They're hoping this will make it one.
Yeah, 100%. And I think one of the other things was moving the coronation to the Saturday, the same day as the Derby as well. So I think they have to kind of almost put all their eggs in one basket, the Jockey Club, with this one, because the Derby is obviously, it's got a wealth of history, as we all know, and you know it's the race that every flat trainer will want to win at some stage in their career if they're lucky. So it's when you want to have all eyes on the sports. And in previous years, as you've mentioned, you could be watching either from the track or from afar on the TV, and you can easily notice the crowd figures. And when you're trying to explain to someone who maybe doesn't watch the sport day in, day out, and you sort of explain what the Derby is, and then you just show them the level of interest it has sort of attracted over the last few years, it's quite concerning. I mean, it's hard to say and kind of sell the sport when there appears to be gaps in the attendances.
Yeah, I'd agree, Pete. It was Derby Day this year was pretty depressing in that sense. Looking out from the stands,
I can't have you go to the Derby being depressed, Lee.
Well, looking out from the stands and seeing so few people on the hill, it did feel quiet. I mean, I looked at and I heard all the plans that they've got for the place and the meeting this year, and I was actually really encouraged. I'm pleased for a start that the place has been shown some love.
And they've put some energy into it.
Yeah,
they've come along and they've gone, yeah, actually, there is a problem here.
Yeah.
We're going to have to put some energy and some investment into it. And it's across the whole thing, isn't it? So whilst things like putting up prize money to the Derby isn't going to necessarily change the complexion, and Aidan O'Brien will probably win it, because that seems to be what happens now, they've not gone, well, we'll do stuff around the outside and not do anything to the races, and equally, we'll do something to the races, not around the outside. So they've taken a holistic approach, I believe it's called.
Yeah.
And they're trying to just give everything a bit more of a premium feel. I think you mentioned when we were speaking the other day about how someone had said to you that it felt a bit cheap last year.
Yeah, I suppose.
And I just think that next year's all about just making it feel more premium, more London's bigged out, more about it being a thing that engages people rather than, well, it's the Derby. Of course you're going to come along because it's the Derby.
Yeah, absolutely. I was slightly disappointed, Pete, that they'd suspended this idea of having a Saturday, Wednesday, Saturday Derby Festival. I was never too bussed the way about the Wednesday, but I did like the idea of having consecutive Saturdays, Oaks on one Saturday, Derby on the second Saturday. But they explained that I think really that was probably too bold a move at a time when the Derby seemed to be in the doldrums. Let's get it back on its feet first.
Get the people in. Get those shots of the people on the hill. You know, because you know, the images were striking how few there were this year. And obviously, the high watermark was Galileo's in 2001 in many respects, with the winner as well. But you know, 120,000 people reportedly there
across the
whole thing. I'm indebted to our former colleague Francis Kelly, who emailed me in response to the story that we did, and he said that he'd gone to that 2001 Derby, gone on the hill with his daughters at the time, and they'd had a big concert there, which no doubt Frank Warren and his team at Queensbury, and they had Atomic Kitten, had Steps, Hearsay, Nick Kershaw, they had Deacon Blue, they had like this ridiculous group of people that attracted customers in. I mean, I think you've been down to Australia, obviously, and you've talked about how they put on events for people.
I think that's key, event.
And that's it. And I don't know if you've seen Frank Warren's
It's very good, that trailer.
Do you know what I mean? He's on the phone.
It's really good,
So, you know, again, it's energy and it's positivity. You know, the proof will be in the pudding, but I like that they've stood up and said, yeah, it's bad and we're going to sort it out. Not that this is the Derby and you will come to it because we say you will.
Liam, have you heard him those bands that, that Pete was referencing?
Don't be like that, Liam.
No, he,
Liam,
he's young.
I'm not old.
Would it? Well, I am. I mean, does that mean anything to you, Liam? Hearsay? Deacon Blue?
Beverly Knight? Yeah. Gabrielle? He loves all of those bands. He's always going on about Gabrielle.
Yeah, absolutely. All-time favourites of mine.
Yeah, I'm not convinced.
But just what you were saying there, Lee, I think the good thing is that the Jockey Club have realised that there has been a sort of a downfall with the Derby, the festival. So it's important that they're acknowledging that, like Pete said, and hopefully we can, you know, with the help, to get the sort of help from someone like Frank Warren, who we know what he's done in boxing in that sport and stuff. So to get that help is quite crucial, and hopefully we can slowly see a turn in them. An upscale of the big race.
Yeah, fingers crossed. And also, Liam, as well, this could be an entire Jockey Club letter episode, really, but the wider growth plans that Jim Mullen referenced include pumping money into Cheltenham and Aintree, because they are the two tracks that make the most money for them. We also had news this week from the BHA and the PJA regarding the latest situation with regards weighing room update, and a point the PJ wanted to reference was that it's the Jockey Club tracks that are really lagging behind generally, certainly in relation to ARC and the Indies. The Jockey Club is not doing as well as the PJ would have wanted in terms of speed of development.
Yeah, which is, you know, it's for their standards, it's quite alarming. I think Once the sort of dust has settled on this news that we've heard about the investments, I think they'll need to realise that they need to get the standards of everything else sort of up to where they should be. I mean, listen, we could have you mentioned there having a whole episode on the Jockey Club. We can have one on the weighing rooms. We've had it before, so it's important that sort of everyone is moving in the right direction to ensure that the standards are where they should be for a sport like racing.
Yeah, absolutely.
If only the Jockey Club had somewhere they could get lots of money from to develop weighing rooms, Lee.
You just wouldn't let it lie, would you? Wouldn't let it lie. Before we move on from the Jockey Club, just one other point to make. In my column in the Racing Post today, obviously it was Kempton heavy, but I also referenced Pete, and this is something that I'd be interested in your take on. So when you're around long enough, people start telling you things, which is very useful as a journalist. And I heard a few bits about how the Jockey Club leadership, some within them, are starting to think about whether there would be merits in a potential bid to acquire some or all of the Rubin Brothers-owned Arena Racing Company. That, I think the idea that would have shocked, stunned, surprised many people in the sport. Clearly, in the Jockey Club's current financial situation, it couldn't be doing that, and much water would have to pass under the bridge if that was to happen. But it seems that there are key figures within the Jockey Club who have started to think about that as something that potentially might be attractive in the future. So we've got a new Jockey Club chief executive, Jim Mullen, so you'd expect him to be thinking new things. And I was told that, the early conversations had been taking place. That'd be big, wouldn't it? Jeez.
Yeah, but you're right. They'd be foolish not to consider it.
Yeah.
You know, ARC is a highly commercial beast. So if the offer's right, I'm sure they wouldn't be disinclined to have the conversations at the very least. So, you know, it's we know British Racing isn't in a particularly strong financial position. Consolidation's always something that's considered in these sort of environments, mm-hmm. isn't it? So, I mean, why not?
Yeah.
Why not? I mean, presumably that must be your reaction. If that's why you.
Yeah, there, I think you know, if the money was there to do it, then you absolutely
the money from
money from something. Then absolutely you could see why it would be very attractive, and you will have, I think, people within racing will be saying, you know, that'd be great in the sense that there will be more racecourses within the British Racecourse portfolio whose profits were being pumped back into the sport as opposed to two shareholders. Others might say, well, you make that argument, but look at the situation with weighing rooms. Mm-hmm. It's ARC that is moving faster on that than the Jockey Club. So you can see it both ways. We are going to be discussing at some point in the very near future Lord Allen's address at the Gimcrack dinner, which wasn't quite as explosive as we'd expected. And Pete was in court last week to discuss something that we talked about in a previous episode of The Front Page.
Reporting on court.
Yeah, those days are behind him. Horse racing. There was a lot of it over the weekend. We will reference Hong Kong and the fireworks that we did see there at Sha Tin on Sunday in a second. But first of all, Liam, you were at Cheltenham with me on Friday. We had two cracking days there. It led to the December Gold Cup on Saturday, which was run this year as a Support Hunt Family Fund December Gold Cup as part of a fundraising effort for the charity, the fund that's been created in honour of Carol, Hannah and Louise Hunt by John and Amy Hunt. It aims to raise money for charities linked to women and girls in desperate need of support. Lots of money was raised, Liam, across a Winter Wonderland event on Thursday and racing on Saturday, upwards of about £250,000 quid now. Remarkable effort, and a remarkable effort by John and Amy to do so much work around this. I was there on Saturday. I watched the big race in the commentary box, the BBC Radio commentary box, as John was calling it. I spoke to him after the race. Then, and on Thursday, he and indeed Amy have been utterly inspiring. There aren't the words there to describe what they're doing and the sort of people they are. It was an incredible a couple of days, Thursday and Saturday, Liam, in that sense.
Yeah, it was. And listen, nobody can ever imagine what it would feel like to what John and Amy experienced it in summer last year. Obviously, I was there on Thursday as well at the fundraising night at Cheltenham, and it was great to see the race named in his honour on Saturday as well. So I was watching from afar, but I had the ITV coverage on the television, but I put the commentary on mute and listened to John call the race home, and I think that in itself is just a tremendous way, and it just shows you that the person he is, and I think what him and Amy have done over the last couple of days and what they intend to do in the future with this fund, it speaks volumes of the courage and the strength that family have shown, and it's great that racing and you know, the sports from a wider view have all come together and support them, and it's truly tremendous to see how much money they've raised as well for what they're trying to do.
Yeah, utterly extraordinary. Pete, on Sunday, Hong Kong, the last big hurrah of the international racing calendar, Hong Kong International Races. There was European success with Soucy for Andre Farb in the Vase. Romantic Warrior was sensational in the Hong Kong Cup, in which a protester got on the track. But I suppose the real headline performance was Kai Ying Rising in the sprint. Breathtaking, yet again, arguably his best ever performance, certainly a better performance than he put up in the Everest when he went to Australia in October. He is an exceptional talent. On the figures going into this meeting, he would not end the year as the world's best racehorse. That will be Calandigan. Those figures will be reviewed by before that gets announced in January. Who is the world's best racehorse?
Well, such a question seems beyond my limited capabilities.
There is nothing beyond your capabilities.
It'd be quite novel to have a sprinter as a world's best horse, wouldn't it?
So you can sprint it then to get marked down just because the division, if you like, isn't as sexy and tends not to have the strength and depth of the middle distance division.
It would be difficult for me to get into the mind of a handicapper. Mm. Been trying to do it for many years without success.
Yeah.
It makes sense, doesn't it?
Yeah.
It makes sense in that respect. So, look, he was remarkable. He continues to be a remarkable horse. He won't be coming to Ascot, as we're told, but we still get to enjoy what he's able to do. I'm not sure how much more I can add to what's been said about him, really. He turns up, he wins. He looks brilliant every time he does it. And if he does end the year as the world's best horse, it would be deserved. No, there's going to be few people arguing with it, are they?
No. Who would you give it to, Liam?
I think Kai Ying Rising just continues to show how good he is. I mean, to win I think, was it 16 wins in a row now? He's only not won twice at two of his 17 start or 19 starts. I just think he's everything you'd ever want in a sprinter, really.
Yeah, absolutely. We are galloping towards the final furlong of this week's episode. Before we do that, I was up in York on Tuesday for the Gymkrak dinner, a great big industry event where every year there is a keynote industry speaker. This year was a bit different because the speaker was Lord Allen, the BHA chair, who requested not to give a speech but to do a Q&A interview with broadcaster and journalist Lydia Hislop. The expectation beforehand was given to us that Lord Allen would be pretty explosive and would say plenty that was copy worthy. In the end, Pete, as I was up there, one doesn't want to be overly harsh because almost everything he said, made good sense, a lot of wise words and sensible opinion. I don't think he basically said what people were expecting. I think they thought he would say more, that he would be clearer in his vision for the future, and he might give them more hope that the ship is safe in his hands.
So you were there, so you'll be better able to judge whether this is... I was listening back to his speech today, his conversation, I should say, today. It struck me as a bit like almost like a naivety, and there was a lot of, we'll just do this together, we'll be able to sell more, we'll be able to have a better relationship. I mean, none of that. Was it sort of slightly, come on, guys, let's just get together and we can do this, sort of cluckiness rather than...
I think a lot of what he said, people sort of in the room were thinking, well, like, you know, no do-do, Sherlock. It was like, you know, we've heard all this before. We know
but
that...
But the solution was almost like, come on, guys, let's all do this, guys.
It was collaboration, it was better relations with government bookmakers, it was need to be more commercial, we need to put customers first. Maybe there was more emphasis on that than we've heard in the past. But I think what people were looking forward to hearing was about how, you know, he's managed to get through these governance changes in the sense that when he... wavered about taking the job, he managed to get through a deal for an independent board.
He very commercially minded.
Absolutely.
The four positions he mentioned, I want the commercial.
Exactly. But what he didn't really make clear was how he wants and how he envisaged the BHA will be more commercial, because to a large extent, the BHA doesn't have anything to be commercial with. I think some thought he might be saying, well, look, we want racecourses to concede this, this and this to enable the BHA to be more powerful and more of a real leader in the sport. It just felt that maybe some punches were pulled, and perhaps, though, that is just his way of doing things.
Was that your feeling, or was that the feeling in the room?
The general feeling in the room was one of underwhelmed. Mm-hmm. I think there was a sort of view that this might be like an I have a dream moment.
Okay.
And it wasn't like that. The troops weren't really rallied. And that's not to say he's still not the man for the job. And I say maybe his modus operandi is just different to someone who's going to come out and deliver fireworks from a lectern.
Yeah.
But I think people have just not quite as convinced as they would have been before.
Sure. I mean, and to some extent, maybe if he's coming in and saying, look, there isn't a silver bullet, I can't just fix it overnight. Maybe that's... Again, the sport needs to hear it. You know, he's not some sort of messianical figure that comes in and says, "Right, you'd be missing this all these years."
Yeah.
So, I don't know. I don't know. There was talk about some of the projects going on, like Beacon, that he seemed quite keen on.
He talks about pace a lot. Now, you've been chasing pace left, right, and centre.
Slowly chasing pace.
Well, I referenced in the piece I wrote from York, or actually from the train coming back to King's Cross. Wife was terrible. That he referenced pace on multiple occasions. And yet you speak to people in the industry, particularly racehorse figures, and they all seem to think pace is going nowhere.
But is this the naive angle? So there's a lot about pace, which is this super premier races, race fixtures. About,
packaging things
different. Yeah, getting so 25-ish flat fixtures, packaged together, sold broadcasting rights, get everybody in that sense. On the face of it, great idea.
Yeah.
Sounds really, but you know, again, I was speaking to a senior racecourse executive not so long ago, and they said, look, pace, we love the idea of having more control over these fixtures, but it's like the projections aren't right? You know, they're too optimistic,
yeah.
Particularly in terms of the Far East income, you know, Japan and Hong Kong and what have you. It's not going to work in its current guise. So that's what I mean in terms of the naivety. Is it this sort of, there's the kind of a wishing, and if we just work a little bit harder, we can do the things we haven't done before. Whereas that, in actuality, these things just don't work, and we've got to either accept they don't work or move on to something slightly more adjacent.
Yeah,
I don't know.
I don't want to
do the guy down. So it wasn't there.
No, and that's
but he just, you know, we didn't come away quite.
Exactly,
in a way,
that.
And that's from afar. That's not.
Yeah, no, no, nothing he said didn't sound sensible. Mm. It's just I think people have such hope in what he might achieve that maybe he didn't quite deliver on Tuesday. Do you have any take on it, Liam?
No. I mean, I guess you're just kind of hoping that something major comes from this, but maybe just that's just not the way that he's operating or he plans to operate. I think. He's probably trying to assess the whole situation and then go from there and you know, sort of reassess it in the new year. But as you can imagine, you probably kind of hoped that something more would come out of it, especially given the way that, you know, you talked about at the Q&A with Lydia as well. So it'll be interesting to see if any more comes from that and what Lord Allen plans to do for the sort of foreseeable.
Yeah, 2026 in that sense is going to be fascinating. We will end the programme now by just reflecting on a story that we gave you last year in the Racing Post and on the front page, relating to a gentleman called Hayden Simcock, who was connected to an illegal WhatsApp bookmaker called The Post. We exposed The Post and Mr. Simcock last year, his activities. And Pete, he was in court last week, on Monday last week in Birmingham. You were there as well. The upshot of it was that Hayden Simcock was given a suspended 30-week jail sentence and fined, look at this, £290,154. In no small part because of one particular victim of The Post, Mark Dunphy, who it emerged or was confirmed in court, is owed a colossal sum of money.
Yeah, over 200 grand he had put into The Post, having been introduced to Hayden Simcock. And, you know, he had his bets and he won some money and he tried to take the money out and they come up with all the excuses under the sun as to why they couldn't, which is one of the things that we've repeatedly tried to put forward in our coverage, is that when you're dealing with black markets bookmakers, your money's not safe.
No.
So yes, the bulk of the fine that Mr. Simcock will have to pay is restitution to Mark Dunphy, although whether or not paying a fine of £300 a month until it's gone, it's quite the level of justice that anyone involved in the case thinks it should be, you know, leaves a slight question mark over it, I think I have to say.
But at least the case reached...
The case reached a conclusion. They were able to successfully prosecute somebody in that sense. We got a better understanding of how these operations work, that there's a Mr. Big behind it, who's known as David Lyons, although nobody thinks that's his actual name. References to Albanian gangsters.
Yeah, geez, there was some very alarming stuff in your coverage there.
So, you know, the reason for pursuing this and the reason that you went and did what you did to help bring the story to the surface is to show that, like, these aren't just not high street bookmakers. It's not like they're the same as high street bookmakers, but they're not licensed. Yeah. You know, these are
they're
not nice people, and they're prepared to do whatever they want to you know, keep your money and keep your betting with them. So it was good that it reached the conclusion that it did, but I don't think anyone would read any of the coverage we've done on it and not be disconcerted by it.
Yeah, absolutely. And just before we leave you, actually one last thing. Pete, fascinating piece you've done in today's Racing Post, digging deep into Hilsin investigation. Just tell me, is there one thing that you take out of it from having spoken to the BHA team relating to that? Is there one thing that you've learned or lesson or thing that you take for the future?
Well, the key element of it was that the BHA used this new technology effectively. Yeah. Or it's not new technology, it's new technology to them.
Yeah.
Which is where they used they extracted data from people's phones, yeah. The people who cooperated, obviously some people didn't cooperate. And they used this to create such a strong prosecution case that really the defendants, Dylan Kitts and John Higgins, who didn't participate in the hearing but was obviously involved, they didn't really have a leg to stand on in terms of refuting what had been put to them. Obviously, Chris Honor was fined for lying to stewards but wasn't found to have been involved in the plot. So the BHA have this weapon to hand. This was the first case they used it for. They say they've used it plenty since, which I don't know whether you see that as a positive or negative, the fact that they feel they've had to go to this several times since. So the case did take too long. There were issues around how the people who were involved felt about how it was handled. But it's interesting to know, and it's useful to know, that the BHA have this weapon they can call on that just gives a better image at the time of what people are doing. You know, it's not your word versus my word, it's your word versus all the stuff I've got on my documents to show. So it'll be interesting to see how it's used in future cases.
And you can read Pete going inside the Hilston investigation in today's Racing Post, Monday's Racing Post, and online if you are a member of our Ultimate Members Club. That then is the end of this week's session. Pete Scargill, thank you so much.
Lee, it's always a pleasure, sir.
You too, happy Christmas. Liam, is it still raining?
It is. I think it's here all week, but I'll be back in Lambourne and ready for hopefully not as much rain.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks to Liam. Thanks to Pete. Thanks to you for watching. Loads to look forward to in the coming days. And we will be back here next week. Until then, bye-bye.